noticias falsas llamada NewsGuard está generando polémica. La plataforma pretende decidir por el usuario qué noticias son confiables. Los expertos señalan que el programa actúa como un sensor. Nicolás Trinchero reporta.
Si me preguntas a mí personalmente digo que no, pero vamos a dejar que opinen los que más saben, un poquito más adelante. Lo que podemos decir por ahora es que se ha desarrollado una aplicación, una plataforma que pretende identificar cuáles son los medios confiables y cuáles no. Cuáles son objetivos y cuáles son subjetivos, cuáles publican fake news y cuál no, y seguramente nosotros estamos del lado rojo, como ya podríamos ver. Este sitio se llama NewsGuard y fue fundado por gente que ha integrado en diferentes momentos cargos funcionarios en ejecutivos, también en diferentes gobiernos de Estados Unidos, incluso en la parte bursátil también. Cuando usted abre la página de NewsGuard, se encuentra con esta frase, con esta afirmación: restauramos la confianza y la responsabilidad. Nosotros ponemos en duda que esto sea así. Vamos a ver cuáles son los criterios que ellos intentan aplicar para dilucidar qué puede ser una fake news o qué no, o cuál es una información confiable o cuál no. Por ejemplo, no publicar contenidos falsos. Lo analizan, ¿no? Si hay falsos o no. Corregir o aclarar errores, separar noticias y opinión, señalizar la publicidad, facilitar información sobre los autores. Todos estos son los criterios que teóricamente aplica NewsGuard para diferenciar algo confiable de algo que no lo es. Pero vamos a ir ejemplo concreto. ¿Qué pasa con nosotros, no? ¿Somos confiables o no somos confiables? Parece que no tanto. Por ejemplo, si se refiere a no publicar contenidos falsos, NewsGuard dice que nosotros sí lo hacemos. Nos gustaría ver las pruebas. Y acá podríamos agradecer la consideración. Dice que corregimos o aclaramos errores, que señalizamos la publicidad. Gracias por eso también. Pero también dice que no separamos noticias de opinión, lo cual es falso. Si uno entra a la página de actualidad.rt.com, se puede dar cuenta rápidamente que hay una solapa que dice opinión, y si abre ahí, no solamente se ven las noticias de opinión, sino que también se ve la reseña de cada periodista o especialista que da la opinión en concreto. Por otra parte, ¿cuáles son los otros medios que tienen luz verde o luz roja? Bueno, luz verde, acá no nos vamos a asombrar, ¿no? The New York Times, The Guardian, Fox News, CNN, Voice of America, están todos habilitados a poder contar con la confianza de NewsGuard. Pero por el otro lado, aparecemos nosotros nuevamente, Sputnik, la agencia rusa, Wikileaks, obviamente también va a estar tachado en rojo en este caso. Atención con esto, porque NewsGuard es una aplicación o una plataforma que se instala por defecto, es decir, automáticamente en cualquiera de los productos de Microsoft, mejor dicho, en el buscador de Microsoft, en Explorer, ya viene instalado en NewsGuard, y en Estados Unidos todos los colegios, universidades, bibliotecas están ya con este, de alguna manera decir, buscador, ¿no?, identificador de noticias instalado automáticamente, y los móviles y ordenadores que sean comprados o vendidos en Estados Unidos también ya vienen con el NewsGuard instalado.
El bloguero José Luis Camacho señala que hay una lista bastante larga de noticias falsas de los medios de comunicación occidentales, además de que la plataforma está asociada a personas ligadas a la Bolsa de Valores y la inteligencia militar. Escuchemos.
Efectivamente, hay una serie de personalidades políticas, están miembros del staff de Dow Jones, hay miembros también que correspondieron a inteligencia militar de Estados Unidos. Como vemos, está rodeado esta aplicación de gente que, por supuesto, no ha demostrado un alto grado de filantropía y de labor social hacia la humanidad. Nos damos cuenta de ello. Hay una máxima que dice: desconfiar de los gobiernos que quieren convertirse en guardianes de la verdad. Esto tiene que tenerse por defecto en todas aquellas decisiones que se tomen, y desde luego esta aplicación demuestra que intenta ser un guardián de la verdad cuando lo que realmente está siendo es un censor, como históricamente han existido a lo largo de la historia. La labor de descubrir la verdad es una labor en la cual hay que arremangarse, estudiar, investigar y descubrir los intereses que se ocultan detrás de cada noticia que se está mostrando.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream of Free Radio anyway, this Thursday, January 17th, 2019, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. I'll be with you running through a bunch of interviews, mostly around the RV harassment situation or the need to essentially look at that whole situation more closely, establish a way of monitoring claims and concerns about harassment, and then acting on them in some meaningful way. Also up for discussion, the new fence around the Ross Camp, as we call it, and the upcoming city council meeting and the proposed step back from the rent control and just eviction protection under threat of referendum and recall. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Warming Center program, Watsonville and Santa Cruz, not open tonight, based on temperature forecast. So, if you need shelter, there are shelters every night in both Santa Cruz and Watsonville. In Watsonville, Salvation Army on Union Street, open every night, 7:30. Santa Cruz is the Salvation Army winter shelter. They have pre-registration. You have to email them first. Email address is wintershelter@gmail.com. Let them know your name, date of birth, gender, etc. If you need a blanket or warm clothing, leave a message here. Keep calling back. We'll try to get something to you. We hope you get on all the waiting lists at the Homeless Services Center. Squeaky wheel gets the grease on that one. Please be aware of the day and night storage program. Lighten your load. Keep things safe. Let us carry your burden for you so you don't have to carry your bedding and stuff around. Everyone gets access to at least 20 gallons of storage with a written, with a basic agreement. We're located at 150 Felker Street, Suite H, from Ocean Street Denny's. That's Felker Street, all the way down to the end, from the Ross store across the footbridge, and we're right there on the left on Felker Street, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. in the morning and 5 to 7 p.m. every night. To reach Brent Adams, 588-9892, again, 588-9892. Take good care of yourself. Focus on being warm so you can take care of those around you. We'll see you soon at the Warming Center program.
And that's what you get when you dial the Warming Center's message tonight, 246-1234, 246-1234. Apparently, though, it's been heavy rain, the Warming Center is not open, and it's partially, I mean, actually largely because Brent adopts a standard that involves a certain amount of precipitation, a certain amount of temperature barrier that has to do with the number of personnel he has. Also, it's not really accessible by the parking lot at Ross anymore. There's this huge fence that has been put up, apparently to protect Ross from the depredations of the camp, the tent city, the Heroes Camp, as some call it, the, oh, I don't know, River Street Campground 2, some others call it. Some call it the Ross Campground. This fence is new. It went up about a week ago. It's not that new. But it does precludes people from walking from the to and from the camp to the shopping center there, and vice versa. and it makes it rather awkward. I'm not quite sure how emergency vehicles are going to easily get in. I guess through the levee they could. And also, of course, you can access the camp, I think, through the pedestrian bridge. I haven't been out there since the fence went up, so I can't give you all the details. But perhaps I will be able to talk to someone who has. In fact, I think some of my interviews that I'm now going to be playing for you have some of that information. So last week, for regular listeners already know this, but there was a protest/press conference at the main police station between Alice Cool, who's a person who lives in her vehicle, who was concerned about harassment from Chief Mills Enforcement Officer Joe Habey and others, as well as unresponsive personnel at the police department, wanted to see a change in policy towards people who live in their vehicles. She has a family of three children, lives there with her husband, has for the last 4 months on and off after difficulties which she detailed on a prior program here. And we're going to have some interviews with her. But you can read my description of that whole event that happened, where Andy Mills, in essence, told them to go take a hike to the city council, and we're very sorry, but essentially they're going to be, quote, enforcing the law, except not enforcing the law, on people in their homes who are making false police reports about people in their vehicles in order to get police out there to move them along prior to the 72-hour period when they're not supposed to be moving along. Now, Mills didn't say that he was going to be violating the law, but he didn't say he was going to more closely examine the concerns raised by Cole, that people were making these calls against her vehicle and forcing her to move even after she'd just been there for a very brief period of time. So you can be the judge, because the entire interview was, as regular listeners know, played on the station and is now archived. If you want to go to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at huffsantacruz.org, you can check out the lost shows, and you'll find that under last Sunday's show, which I guess would be the 13th. You can also find video of this, and all these are noted on the story online, The Van Dwellers Meet the Police Chief, Relearning Sad Facts, story I posted yesterday, I guess it was. Check it out. It's at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. The Van Dwellers Meet the Police Chief. So I'm going to begin with a rather longer interview with tenant activist Cynthia Berger, who's been on the air before, talking about, as I mentioned, the decision of a sort of a subcommittee or a committee of the Movement for Housing Justice, I believe it's called, to recommend to the City Council that they back off on the second reading of the Just Eviction Ordinance, because they're afraid that there's going to be a referendum and a recall on it. You're going to hear her discussing that, and also her reactions to the press conference that she was at. She was actually doing some video there. She helped to organize it, and some other issues that came up at the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting yesterday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. We meet every week there at 11. In case you're interested, free coffee. Come check it out. Bring your concerns. Bring your friends. Who knows what might happen. Okay, well, I'm on the line, and it's shortly after noon, with tenant and unhoused and just all-around activist Cynthia Berger. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Robert.
And you you came to the Huff meeting yesterday, and you also went to a meeting and invited some of us to come to the meeting of the Movement for Housing Justice, which was operating on a rather... not necessarily unexpected, but rather important issue, which you've talked to me about. You want to summarize that?
Yeah, so the City Council had a first reading of a just cause eviction law on January 8th, and their plan was to have a second reading on January 22nd, next week, and it was brought to the attention of the Movement for Housing Justice Coalition that the landlord coalition is going, if that just cause eviction law is passed, they will mount a referendum referendum and a recall. So we wanted to hear the details of that, and we wanted to hear strategy advice, and we met, we considered the timelines, we were apprised of the requirements for signatures and the timeline for the referendum, which is different than the timeline for gathering signatures for the recall. And, you know, we thought about the likelihood of having an election during when the students aren't here, but they're absolutely essential for any kind of progressive, passing anything progressive in the city. So we felt that we, and also because we know that the landlords have mounted many successful referenda against rent control laws in the past 2 years, and that they have a company they work with where they pay a lot of money per signature. So we
let me interrupt you, Cynthia. Let me interrupt you and ask about this issue of referendum. I think you told me before it was 10,000 signatures are required for the referendum and 20,000 for if they want to recall. I think you mentioned council members Brown and Crone. But what other referenda have actually been done in the last, has it been the last 2 years, or are you talking about a longer period of time?
Well, they did a referendum, back when they brought up rent control three times in the late 70s, early 80s.
Here in Santa Cruz.
And they did overturn one of those laws when it passed by the city council, because a referendum can't overturn a ballot initiative. It can only overturn either an ordinance or a temporary ordinance. If you pass an emergency temporary ordinance, which is a third kind of law, and it takes a supermajority, then it's illegal to have a referendum. So
was that strategy considered?
That's why the rent freeze wasn't overturned by referendum.
Now, was that strategy considered by this group?
What, a supermajority?
An emergency action by city council.
For the current city council?
Correct.
No, because we didn't have a fifth vote.
And that would that possibly?
We didn't know. We hoped that we could get five votes on the rent freeze, because it wasn't a permanent thing, and it was just, you know, we justified it to even those who are against rent control to say, hey, we want to be able to have a civic conversation and a campaign without having every single tenant have their rent raised and be evicted. And if you don't pass an emergency ordinance, that is what is going to happen, because there is going to be a rent control campaign.
This was last February.
Yes, so we had talked to them well ahead of time and lobbied them and educated them about what happens, you know, when you start to talk about rent control, which they had already done starting in September and October. When the city council starts to talk with rent control publicly, they are putting tenants at risk, and they need to just be aware of that.
And that's still true, of course.
Right, right. And so they, you know, they were willing to, you know, it was amazing. It really hasn't happened before, except maybe once in the state, but that they were able to do that, pass an emergency ordinance. So they're very hard, unless you have a supermajority.
So if one of those three council members is persuaded to change their mind sometime in the next 6 months, you could still pass such an emergency resolution.
Overturned at any time.
An emergency.
Matter.
I thought you said.
Oh, emergency?
Correct.
We don't think that's possible at all.
In the sense that you don't think you can get that fifth vote.
No.
But if you could, it would be a viable alternative. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Right. Understand. So this, you guys, as I understand, had a fairly lengthy discussion of this. There were some who were concerned that maybe, you know, it would still be best to press on with tenant. You know, try to get tenant power, that this was some sort of, you know, surrendering to the landlords. But there was ultimately a decision to encourage the city council to, what, back off on the proposed
because
ordinance.
This is not going to provide tenant power, because it will be immediately overturned. And, in fact, it's going to take away tenant power, because it's going to recall a tenant that's on the board.
Right. But by immediately, you mean within the next 6 months?
Yeah.
Okay. So it would protect tenants, but only up during that period of time, and after that, the so-called progressive majority would be gone.
It doesn't protect tenants, frankly. It's just a symbolic symbolic law, because just cause eviction without rent control means nothing. And so it's just simply a symbolic law. There's no enforcement. All the enforcement is entirely up to the tenant. There's no enforcement of any kind of tenant-landlord law except by the tenant or the landlord.
Now, could the city council, perhaps through the Movement of Housing Justice, actually propose a just eviction law that had teeth?
No, because they just can't, because it's against the law. Because there are California state laws that would supersede that. So
you're thinking of Costa Hawkins or Ellis?
Yeah, all kinds of them. Yeah, landlords have a right to raise their rent whenever they want.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but they...
California state law.
No,
that's rent control.
But they could...
So what's the point of having just cause eviction?
They could put up... You could put up a provision which funds a city agency to protect tenants who are unjustly evicted. Could you not?
How are you going to protect them?
Well, in the sense that that there would be an agency that would go to court to sue for essentially protection.
You can't, because it's a small claims court issue because of the amount of money involved. So you don't even have a lawyer, an agent going to court for you. You go for yourself.
Could be a suit in municipal court, no?
No.
Because
this is a small claims court matter, housing court. Yeah, that's where these issues are. They're civil matters.
Well, municipal court is also a civil court, too. You know, I mean, that's...
Well, I don't think that's really helpful to tenants in the big picture, because in the big picture, all the landlord has to do is raise tenants.
You know, I'm not really arguing around the city. I'm not arguing for it, Cynthia. I'm saying, though, that it is a process. It's something that could be done. That's what I'm saying.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, here's what I'm saying. On the one hand, you're saying, well, this just eviction without rent control has no teeth, so it's not going to be useful anyway without rent control, just simply symbolic. That was one thing you said, and that's probably true. And the issue then, somebody might respond, well, put some fucking teeth in it. Say, you know, fund an agency that will go to bat for these people, either in municipal court or in some means of advising them. You know, in other words, I don't imagine that. I can't believe there isn't some way of putting some teeth into just eviction. I'm not saying that you all should rush down and do it right now, or that, you know,
here's what I have to say to that. There are tenant organizations, tenant activists, and tenant lawyers around the state that have been working on this stuff for years. You know, maybe, and it's a lot more in the last 3 years, and they haven't come up with something like that. So that's why I'm doubtful. They haven't thought of everything, you know. So possibly that's you know, if you want to put that forward to some rent control lawyers, flesh that out. You know, I'll put that out there and see why it would.
Yeah, I mean, if you learn anything more about that, I'd be interested.
Yeah.
I understand you've done a lot of work on this issue, and you've talked to a number of cities and different agencies in those cities. So I'm not trying to second guess you.
Can you give me an example of what kind of case the city would bring against the landlord?
Well, I'm just thinking, first of all, having an ombudsman that would advise someone how to effectively sue, because if you have a series of very specific guidelines that a landlord violates, and if there is a specific penalty for it when it's proved in civil court,
The problem is the burden of proof.
Just 51% is all they need. And
the burden of proof is what I'm talking about. It's like you have to prove in court with documentation.
Right. It's preponderance of the evidence.
Cause.
You just need...
Yeah, but it's something. Most of these things are the tenant's burden. And so they're just not going to do it. Okay? And so...
Well, no, not without support, not without help, and that would be the idea that the city would provide.
Yeah, but the city isn't going to pay someone to help people.
Only if they're required.
Yes, the city needs to. Here's what's going on with that, with what you're saying.
If they're required by law to do so.
There's two groups. There's CRLA, which the bulk of their work is advising tenants, you know, on how to interact with landlords in small claims court. So the city completely cut all legal aid, and so that means basically all help to tenants. And we're going to have the new city council reinstate that. So that will be helpful, because then they'll be at least be able to have some more office hours in the city of Santa Cruz, which, you know, they had to cut. They also, and then there's also a group called Tenant Sanctuary, because CRLA is not able legally to help people who are not documented.
Mm-hmm.
So Tenant Sanctuary will be funded by the city and will be able to help any renter in the city, including whether they're documented or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting legal aid. We have plans for getting legal aid.
My suggestion is that, you know, and I operate out of ignorance and just...
Well, you're talking about an office.
Let me finish. I operate out of ignorance and not with any sense of the specific proposal that you're looking for. But it is my, I think, reasonable supposition that if you pass a tight law that requires landlords to be very cautious in their evictions, nothing about rent control, but cautious in their evictions, then if they violate it, it might not be so hard to prove. If also you strengthen the protections that tenants get in terms of advice and assistance from the city, not necessarily...
Right, but Robert, the issue is, mm-hmm. you can think all you want about that, but the issue is there will be a referendum and it will be overturned. So that's the issue.
It might be harder to overturn tenant protections that were done, you know, even incrementally, but tenant protections that are specific and don't involve rent control at all.
Well, number one, right now the landlords are very well organized, and they're going to overturn.
No, I know that.
It smacks of any of that. So yes, these things can be brought up incrementally in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think your point that it is that we're not really talking about rent control specifically because of, you know, the defeat of, you know, Proposition 10, but also I suppose rent control could still be brought up if this weren't the case, if there weren't this referendum and recall problem, and it would be legally feasible, but politically speaking, you're saying that the risk is too great. My question, of course, is if you don't bring up rent control, but you do bring up just eviction. But anyway, let's proceed with what you're...
You don't understand how just cause eviction works because...
Well, explain it to us then.
Yeah, so I mean, you have a series of reasons for which you can evict people, and you can't evict them just for no cause, which you can... without such a law. A landlord can evict you without giving you a reason. A lot of people don't understand that. They don't realize that.
Yeah, I understand
that. And landlords usually do offer a reason, whether it's true or not. You know, sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. And so a smaller landlord's more likely to evict you than a landlord that owns a lot of properties sometimes, too, because the ones that have a lot of property, they like to have a regular... You know, they rely on having a regular income for their large investment, I think. Mm-hmm. That's just an opinion. But at any rate, so, you know, the thing is that that's fine to have all these eviction protections, but without rent control, they don't matter.
Well, no, that's where
you can't put teeth into it, and that's the reason.
That's where we began the conversation, and again,
yeah.
I guess I'm not persuaded, but that doesn't matter because I'm ignorant on this issue a lot, and I'd have to think about it more. And as you point out, perhaps have some conversations or look at it more closely. I mean, it seems
serious. Well, whatever. I mean, if you just think about it, like, okay.
In other words, take.
I want to get rid of you, but I don't have a just cause, so I'm just going to raise your rent. That's all that it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's not eviction. That's just eviction by rent raise.
Right, and that is true. But if that were done substantially throughout the county, it would have an impact on frightening tenants into actions that might actually mobilize them, too.
No, it is done. It's been done throughout the county for the last 4 years.
That's true.
Extensively.
That's true.
And that doesn't make... What happens is they're frightened and they're upset and they're homeless or they move away. They don't have the fighting spirit in 90% of the time.
They don't have the resources, yeah.
And a lot of them are people who are older because you know, this is a wave, a certain sector, older renters who rented for a long time from a fair landlord who dies or passes along their property. Well, that's been a huge number of people.
How about an ordinance, Cynthia? And I'm just sort of, you know, you were discussing what happened, you know, yesterday, and I appreciate that. But let me just throw this at you. I brought this up at the city council, and I also brought it up online when sort of fielding a lot of hostile Discus Sentinel commenters who comment on these stories.
Oh, they're such a waste of time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I understand. But, you know, how about a law requiring landlords to reveal their rent raises and their costs over, you know, every time they raise the rents? So that could be something that would be more difficult for people to do for a referendum on. I mean, they can say, well, it's their right to conceal that stuff, but ultimately you have more tenants still, vaguely, in town.
Well, the thing is,
what do you think of that idea?
You know, I think that there are a number of different kinds of laws that are being explored. You have to understand the whole legal climate around that particular issue, like what are their financial rights and stuff, disclosure rights, you know, privacy rights. So, yes, there are other ways as well. For example, they have to pay property taxes. And I've looked online and seen that a landlord that has been red tagged multiple times also hasn't paid their property taxes in 4 years. And I don't understand. I need to find out more about that. You know, does that mean they have a lien against their property? Who cares? They're still able to screw people over. What if it made their property taxes go up? What if they had a punitive penalty? So you can only penalize people for certain things legally, et cetera. So it's complicated. But, you know, to append a penalty to a property tax bill, or there's also, you know, the city should be charging. I mean, there's other issues here that are related to housing, and one of them is, you know, when real estate changes hands, there's
a transfer fee. A property transfer tax.
It's called a real estate transfer tax is what it's called, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tax. And it can be adjusted somewhat. It's never that high, but it's dealing with a lot of money, so it can bring in a reasonable amount of money. So I looked at other cities in the state, and then they have a much higher real estate transfer tax. And, you know, this being the poorest county in the state next to L.A., which means it's one of the poorest counties in the United States because California is now one of the poorest states, it should have more taxation of people who are making $1 million per house. I think that's reasonable to fund a civic, you know, to fund the city, to fund the problems, to fund affordable housing, et cetera. So I think they should definitely raise a real estate transfer tax. That has to be approved by two-thirds of the vote. And I think, you know, with proper planning, you can put it on a ballot where a lot of the UCSC students are going to vote, and you can pass these things.
Mm-hmm.
Organizing the UCSC students to become more active, as they did this year after many years of not voting, that's crucial to having anything here. Otherwise, the people who are organized are the people with, property owners.
So let me ask you this. This is not about that meeting, but is there much discussion of has there been much discussion of student housing concerns on campus as a part of the coalition with this that you're looking to create?
Well, the students, whether they want to, that's another question. There's a group that is mostly ex-students, but it's called Students United with Renters, and so they do have UCSC students in that group. It's a small group, but, you know, developing group. And they are often attended by and joined by student union assembly officers who are working on housing issues on campus. as you know, like the campus used to be a humanities-oriented campus, but it's now a science-oriented campus, and it doesn't attract as many people interested in political science and sociology, and so it has less of an activist base than it used to. However, everyone is affected by the rents in Santa Cruz. So that's the landlord's fault, because if they just had reasonable rents, the students wouldn't really be interested in voting on much else.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to finish up anything you want to add about this meeting, and then ask you another question about something else.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything else to add about the meeting.
You've also
we're gonna support that they don't pass that law, but not because we want to screw tenants over, but because in the long run, that's going to be bad for tenants if they pass that law right now.
May not even be on the city council agenda. I guess they can pull it.
Yeah, I think it's on there.
Is it?
It's a second reading. But we think, you know, I think either they're going to pull it, maybe they'll pull it if they can do that.
Yeah, I think they probably can. But, you know, you've also been involved more recently. In fact, that's how, you know, we kind of got into contact most recently around the issue of people in their RVs who are being hassled. And you were at this press conference between Alicia Kuhl and Andy Mills and some other RV owners who felt they've been unfairly targeted, or at least are subject to police harassment, neighbor harassment, in violation of, or at least in ignoring the 72-hour window that people in their RVs, people in any vehicle, are supposed to have if they're parked on a city street here in Santa Cruz. What was your reaction to that press conference?
Well, I didn't have great expectations from that press conference. My, you know, interest is as an organizer, I love to see people who don't have power stand up and talk to someone who does have power. And so in that respect, I saw some really articulate people. I met some there, and would like to, you know, contact them and offer support and invite them to participate in those movements of this coalition that is called the Movement for Housing Justice, because there are a lot of people working for housing justice, and I think that if the more that they share information and work together, the better, because they're all marginalized. You know, most of them are marginalized unless they work for a nonprofit to make money off of the marginalized people, you know, or provide them housing, perhaps. But yeah, so I thought it was a good thing to do, but I didn't have high expectations.
For those who weren't at the press conference, of course, you can find the story that I wrote about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you can you can also find
the website, indiemedia.com or .org?
indiebay.org/Santa Cruz.
Okay, great.
And it's also, if any listeners want to get on the Huff email list, those kinds of announcements are sent to you. But also Wes White he's a Salinas activist, for those listening.
Yeah, he's a video activist.
He is. He goes to all kinds of events. A lot of them in Santa Cruz. I'm impressed with his determination. He's not a wealthy guy. He and his cameraman, Dredd, go here and there and everywhere. And they're going up on Monday to the Marysville activists, the Union of the Homeless up there, who are having a Martin Luther King Day protest demanding that the city respond to a lawsuit. Well, they have to respond anyway, that has been filed by Anthony Prince, an attorney who's been working with that. And actually, at the Huff meeting yesterday, we decided to express some support concerns for the Ross encampment, which is now, well, there's a large fence. It doesn't, you know, it's not a concentration camp fence in the sense that it doesn't stop people in the very large Ross encampment from leaving, but it does make it difficult for them to access the shopping center nearby. And it also makes it more difficult to access the homeless lack of services center.
The other night I was driving from Santa Cruz to Scotts Valley through that intersection, and a person ran in front of me. It was completely completely dark there, and I almost hit them. And it wasn't common sense of them to run when they ran, but it would have helped if there was more light at that intersection now that there are a lot of people there. So
that sounds like a good idea. Also,
I think those people should be given a reflective strip that they can wear if they're going to go and cross that thing at night. They need to have some common sense.
I think some yellow jackets.
There's a lot of mentally ill people.
Some yellow vests. Yellow vests would be good for all of us for different reasons, I think, actually.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but also,
yeah, I think you should have a little vest.
I mean, when you came to the Huff meeting yesterday, you came, I think, after the Conscience in Action section of the meeting mostly.
I have about five more minutes.
And this is at that meeting we decided to bring these issues of the problems that are happening at the Ross camp as well. But actually, I'll talk about that independently, Cynthia, since you know you are.
I'd like to just bring up, which maybe you were going to, is that Alicia and I will be traveling around to different folks and areas where people live in their vehicles and doing a survey. And so we would love to, you know, let people know. We don't really need to know. We need to know that the information is true, but we don't have to pass on their, you know, personal information about their identity or their vehicle or, you know.
What kind of information are you seeking, Cynthia?
I'm not sure. I haven't gotten together with Alicia yet to find out what she thinks would be best to gather. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe Huff will have some input in other folks who live in their vehicles. But, yeah. So
I
just want to put the word out there. We'll be coming around and it'll just be the two of us. And mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to talk to us. And we won't.
Yeah, right on. I mean, I guess you're concerned with learning if there's been much support for people in vehicles or harassment or what's been going on.
I mean, we all have our own areas of interest. For me, I'm interested in, I would like, you know, to give people actually a little chart so they can write the date, the time, and the type of harassment. Mm-hmm. And then we could collect those, you know, after 2 weeks or something, you know, make, you know, just plan something so that we can actually collect some data. There's no way to prove that it's really accurate, but, you know, we're going to trust people.
Well, also, I think there's a 911 Public Records Act that could be made, too, if people actually call to complain about a particular vehicle. But
right, so this would be like another program's worth of talking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have at least 2 minutes left here. Let me use the last 2 minutes. I'm losing track, but I think we've covered a lot of it.
Well, there's another student. One more thing.
Yeah.
There's a student at UCSC who has been interacting and requesting from the administration, you know, with letters and formally, that they provide a safe place to park for students living in their vehicles. Currently, it stands where they've denied that due to liability issues. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're more concerned about their insurance costs than about the lives of, you know, students out there living in the street. So, you know, I think that's a vulnerability that can be, you know, approached with them.
Has this person, do they want to be contacted by students and or non-students being supportive of this?
I passed him along all the contact information that I had, and he's getting in contact with both Students United with Renters, and I wanted to send him the Facebook page, too. What is that called? About RV... folks.
RV full-timers.
Yeah, I wanted to pass that mm-hmm. along to him. So
Julie Scholl, yeah.
That way.
Also,
I gave him the information of the on-campus.
Also, you have a phone.
Officers.
You have a phone number. Good.
I have a phone number. People can either call me to know their rights as a tenant, or they can call me to report anything, and I will put that in a database with their, you know, details.
And that's for both RV dwellers and...
Yeah, not online database, an offline database, just so that we can, when we talk to the city council, we can know what we're talking about. We can have actual reports from folks like you do.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be getting reports from...
My number. My number is 831-222-0359. That's my hotline. If you leave me a message, I'll get it.
Repeat it again.
I don't pick up. Mm-hmm. So it's 831-222-0359. And you can find that number if you you Google Santa Cruz tenants or tenants' rights Santa Cruz. And
that's for RV people.
Santa Cruz tenants@gmail.com.
And that's for RV people and tenants and
For anybody.
And anyone
with housing.
And now presuming anyone witnessing those kinds of incidents that are happening.
But nothing to do with finding housing for people, please.
Gotcha. Well, Cynthia, you're full of information, and, you know, I expect an even fuller report next time we talk, of course.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll be able to speak to some folks and get some folks on board, so to speak, with collecting, not just stories, but actually putting it in a, you know, more of a data perspective.
Indeed.
What's going on, you know, certain kinds of incidences like police harassment or just neighbor harassment, what time of night, what forms of harassment, like that. And then I would think it would be great if we could have a public meeting where we could talk to folks who are RV full-timers and, you know, maybe have a public meeting somewhere where we could hand out the current law.
That would be good.
Your
of course,
rights are.
The problem we have, of course, is that people, as you know, are reluctant and they feel targeted. But yeah, if people.
Well,
get,
here's the thing.
If people,
so Alicia
hang on a second.
And I are going to be going around and speaking to a lot of people. And at that time, if we already have a date and a time set, we can pass that information out to each person.
You can indeed. So maybe we will set up such a time.
About that.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I'm going to. I guess I'm going to leave it there. You've given, again, your number one more time.
222-0359, santacruztenants@gmail.com.
And I want to suggest that people do try to document and record with your cell phones are becoming much more frequent and those kinds of devices. Or if a police officer or a neighbor who is hostile comes and wants to make an issue or is even just, you know, skulking around, please go out there, describe what they look like. You can even have a civil conversation with them and tell them you're trying to, you know, feed your children. Can you please, if you want to do a social visit, come back another time, whatever. Anyway, I'm saying recording devices are a good thing to use if you can. And I'll give you the last word here, Cynthia.
I'm done.
And I'm done, too.
Thank you, Robert. Gotta go.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
I'm here now with Vice President of the United States and RuPaul's Drag Race Season 3 finalist, Mike Pence. Mike, thank you so much for joining me. Mr. Vice President, we are currently in the midst of the longest government shutdown in history as the president continues to fight for his border wall. Well, it was a wall, and then it was a fence, I think, and then it was steel slats. So what are we calling it today? Two folding chairs and a bike lock?
The president said we'll build a steel barrier.
Mm-hmm. And what do you say to critics speculating that Donald Trump's actions are selfish, immoral, impulsive, and politically motivated?
Well, look, the American people aren't as concerned about the political debate as they are concerned about what's really happening at the border.
Well, is it really as bad as he says?
Last year alone, 17,000 individuals with criminal histories were apprehended at our southern border.
Why not hire them as senior White House officials? They'll all be convicted eventually.
Democrats refuse to even negotiate.
Well, until this gets sorted out, hundreds of thousands of federal workers will go without paychecks, and he doesn't seem to care.
That's right.
I guess, why should he, though, right? I mean, after all,
he's got money in the bank. He's got spray tan on his face. He's got faceless facts and figures, which he figures please his base. He's got golf at Mar-a-Lago and a ton of Adderall. What ain't he got? A border wall.
That's right.
He gets angry, he gets tough, he gets up and leaves the room. He gets all the Egg McMuffins he can humanly consume. He's a toddler, and until he gets his way, he'll make a fuss. And who's gonna pay? Most likely us.
That's right.
Whether it's a concrete wall, steel slats, or a few decorative brass poles, there is nothing like an unnecessary 2,000-mile barrier that says, hey, look at us, world, we're a bunch of motherfucking assholes.
See what I did there?
There is nothing like a war. As impractical as a beautiful border wall.
My fellow Americans.
He gets badgered, he gets booed, he gets heckled coast to coast. He gets Valentine's from Putin and advice from Hitler's ghost. He gets labeled irresponsible, inhuman, and unfit.
What can't he get?
Girl, he can't get shit. When it comes to behaving like a rational adult, he finds nothing duller. There is nothing whatsoever like a totally manufactured national emergency to distract everyone from what's actually on his mind, which is, you guessed it, Robert Mueller. I just love the way it feels in my mouth.
There is nothing like a war. Nothing
could distract from Mike and Paul.
Life is better without a war.
Stop the criminal gang.
Nothing else would be so tall.
That's right.
Sarah, Donald Trump told us that Mexico would pay for the wall, but now he's saying he never meant they would pay up front and that they'll instead pay in 263 million easy installments of 1995.
You know, we'll see what happens, but the president is committed to making sure that one way or another, whether it's through...
He holds rallies just for fun. He has merchandise for sale. He gets only the best people till they quit or go to jail. He's got Rudy Giuliani. He's got high cholesterol. What ain't he got? A goddamn wall.
There is nothing like a wall.
Just as long as he gets his wall.
This is a humanitarian crisis.
Like a wall.
Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
Or deflects like a wall.
A bona fide emergency.
Like a wall.
Donald Trump has to build the wall.
Or face his face like a wall.
Build the wall.
Nothing acts like a wall.
Except maybe Melania.
Or distracts like a wall.
And the Russia investigation.
And not a thing will work for Nancy and Trump.
Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
And now let's skip to some interviews at the Red Church, where I wandered in last Monday and found the usual crowd chowing down and some of them chatting. Talking to Sonny.
Check this out. When you play music, little kids on Sunday afternoon, they come out and dance. They don't even know what type of music they're listening to, but it gets their adrenaline and body moving, and they're dancing. Their parents are like, go ahead, kids, have a great time. In front of the city council's office, they donated $1 just for the music and having a little dance moment. They enjoyed it. With other gentlemen, too, as well. That was good. Just to throw it in city council's face, that's what music does.
You're here. You mentioned that the last time you spoke about an incident that happened last Monday. Do you want to run that by me one more time?
Where?
Something about, some legal thing,
Legal things. Oh, I'm doing my little batter's treatment, Altos, and I'm not shy or hiding anything from it. I have a domestic violence class. I have 6 more weeks to go, and I'm going to complete it through the law of Santa Cruz.
Thank you, man.
Joel Miller speaks. Savior Christ taught us to pray, who is with us right now. You just kind of put aside the sound and your hunger. Let us pray.
I'm sorry, we didn't get to finish.
Erase that last one. I'm just going for here. When you get arrested and it's cold at night and you get pulled away from a person right next to you under some warm blankets under a hanger, it doesn't take 6 officers just to arrest little old me. And for resisting arrest, I'm not a rubber band. When an officer has me handcuffed and 2 officers are pulling both my arms and repeatedly saying stop resisting,
when you're not resisting,
when I'm not resisting, I'm not a rubber band. They're just playing tug of war with my body.
When did this happen?
Sunday.
And where?
Cinema Regal. Regal Cinema. Next to Levy. And then security guard actually told us to vacate at 2 o'clock. And we weren't doing nothing but sleeping. It was cold. Plus, it was raining.
This was 2 in the morning?
Yeah, so I got arrested with no shoes, and I had to walk to the police department to get my property. Well, I was told that Tuesdays and Thursdays are the only days between from 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock you can get your property. So what happened with Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on getting your property if you get released on those days?
It's tough shit for you.
Oh, so you have to wait another day without no shoes and still walk in the rain. But good thing that there are churches like this right here and other churches around us that can provide clothing on our back, and I'm very well appreciated.
But, of course, if his stuff was taken on Sunday, the Red Church meal doesn't happen until Monday at 6 or 5 if you come for the services beforehand. So it looks like this schedule of only 4 hours per week for storage of, I should say, for picking up stuff seized by the police between 12:30 and 2:30 at the police station is, if not deliberately intended to hurt people whose property has been taken and hold it, even when it's survival gear, but at least it has that impact and it's being ignored by the police instead of being dealt with, even though it's been brought to their attention numerous times.
Of them, and including rain boots when it was raining that afternoon. Now, so I think the folks who are around here opening their doors for us and providing the needs of what...
When did you go to the police station on Tuesday or Thursday to get your stuff?
Oh, yes.
Did they give it to you?
The next day, yes. I'm glad they took care of my instruments, my guitar and my djembe. And I'm glad it was inside, but I noticed, just peeping out from the side of the building, you could barely notice it. That building for returns or getting your property, it's not visible. So it's behind a police station. Wow.
How long did it take you to get your property returned? Did you have to wait long? Was it quick?
I had to wait a while because it's subject. The hours are subject to change. Not early, but maybe whoever gets there in line first. I mean, or whoever gets to the police station.
How many people were there waiting for their property when you were there?
3 going on 4.
And did they have anything interesting to tell you about what happened to them?
Excuse me. Sure. No, they just wanted to get their property. But other than that, some property was a little bit difficult. Some of the paperwork, you cannot copy it or anything. So you have to go to right back to the courts, get another document paper of a copy when you're arrested for your property to be released to you. And that's another few more days until you get your property.
Did you have to prove your property was yours?
Yes, with a case number, yes.
And they had a list of the property that was supposedly yours, and you had a list? How did that work?
Yes, when they arrested me, they threw me behind the, well, you know, vehicle. Cuffs hard, it's tight as fuck. And while I was in the vehicle, they bagged all my property and another person's property as well, because I wasn't just arrested. Another individual that was right next to me, staying warm, was arrested as well.
So, what were they arrested for?
No identification.
That's not a crime.
So for me, trespassing, and her for no identification.
Yeah, that's not a crime. I don't know what they must have cooked up something else.
Mm, so. When
have you seen that person since?
Yes, and so when an officer asks me even for the New Year's to either take care of a dog and help a friend out, okay, I would do that for my friend because he helped me out. But an officer,
did you have a dog with you at the time?
No. Oh, Spot is cool. He's with the family member too. He's good. He got taken care of. And Nathaniel, wherever you are, man, hey, dog's cool.
And we've been talking with?
Sonny.
Of course. Sonny, one last question. You're darker of skin than I am. Is there any racial element in any of this shit?
I don't know. Who do I look like?
I don't know. You look like you could be Cubano. You look like you could be Africano. All kinds of different things.
Yeah, Brazilian, Indian.
But you're not a whitey, man. I'm sorry.
No, I've just been whitewashed. I've been hanging around with a lot of friends.
You could use white face. You know, you could paint your face.
Yeah, we have that comedy show with Eddie Murphy. We could do it again, a remake version. Here in Santa Cruz.
So you haven't experienced any problems because of your skin color?
No.
Well, that's good. All right, well, I'm going to keep...
I noticed some individuals may look identical to me and do wrong things, but...
Well, you guys look alike, you know.
Oh, we all us males, we all look alike, you know. We couldn't even tell a description of who it was, so...
Well, I'll try to keep... I could mark you with an X over here next time I see you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
sir. Make sure it's a red bag, though.
Take care, man. Oh, right.
Jeremiah.
Go ahead, man.
Well, since I've been in Santa Cruz now about 6 years or so, you know, I don't see much police harassment from the homeless. I see nowadays, 2019, you know, I see more harassment from the park rangers on Pacific Avenue harassing the homeless people than the police do.
Well, of course, the police are running the park rangers these days. Did you know that?
No.
At least most of them. There's six under the jurisdiction, I think it's six, of Chief Mills of the police department, and three under the jurisdiction of Tony Elliott of the parks.
Oh.
Those are all parks rangers, I understand.
Oh, I thought, you know, the rangers were in a different category than what the police were.
Yeah, me too, but he made a kind of a rearrangement of the departments. Last spring, I believe. I don't know. And so, have you seen any particular instances of harassment that concerned you recently?
They mostly pick on the panhandler, you know, and they harass each panhandler differently than one from another, you know. With me, when I panhandle, they complain that I have too much spread out. When it's a different panhandler, they say something different because I feel like, you know, it's only the rangers who don't want the panhandlers panhandling on Pacific Avenue, you know. But I don't know what's the other panhandler's opinion about working on the avenue, but with me, they always find some excuse to harass me for, you know, trying to get some money to get some tea, you know.
Now, when was the last time this happened?
Oh, I think it was like sometime last week.
And where were you? Were on Pacific Avenue?
Yes.
And it was a ranger who came up and did this?
Yes.
What did he or she say?
He said to me, I know you're working, but you've been here too long. You've got to move to a different spot now.
What were you doing? Were you sitting? Were you standing?
I was sitting on the one side of one of those boxes with the wings. I mean, a circle thing.
What was the nearby shop?
I think it was called the Hat Co.
The Hat Company?
Yeah.
Fair enough. We've been talking with...
Jeremiah.
Anything else, Jeremiah?
My personal opinion is the city needs to do something about the rules and regulations for the rangers so they won't harass, you know, the panhandlers who are trying to get money for food, you know.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Welcome.
All right.
Anonymous.
Anonymous, you say somebody really liked your shoes?
While I was sleeping.
And what happened?
I had backups, so I didn't have to worry about it.
Somebody actually made off. Maybe they just wanted to shine them and bring them back to you.
Within my arm's reach, you know.
Well, you had already taken them off.
Oh, yeah, I don't keep them on in my sleeping bag.
A gift to a person who was passing by?
Well, they only got some worn-out shoes with holes in the bottom, so...
Holy shoes?
Yeah, they got my holy shoes.
Wow. And you have had no trouble sleeping, though, other than losing your property now and then?
No, not lately. So far, so good.
Will you be coming to the next Tough Conscience and Action meeting, or have you had enough of that group?
No, I might. I at least for the coffee is good.
There you go. There's always that. And, well, thank you, Anonymous. Anything else?
No, I just wish everybody a good new year and better for everybody.
Thank you. Any reports from the street?
It's going to be wet for the next 7 days.
7 days of rain coming up. True enough.
Between 90 and 100%.
Well, they say there are empty buildings around here somewhere.
The old Toys R Us. It's what, 37,000 square feet?
You mentioned a big arena thing over there.
Sears.
Or just downtown. I understand those shops don't have anybody there at night now.
Look good.
Although it'll be not. Yeah. Hmm?
Live at 1 o'clock.
Live on the scene.
The red diner exhibit.
And we've been talking with
Louise Mitchell again.
Thank you.
I got one for you. I actually admire you, and I admire everything that you do. Yeah. You know, like me personally, I've been homeless on the street since I was 13 years old. You know,
and you are how old now?
I'm 21 years old.
Okay. You're in Santa Cruz?
I'm still living. I'm born and raised Santa Cruz citizen, and Santa Cruz local
resident,
and you know, like my parents lost their place when I was around 13 years old, and I've been living on the streets ever since. Both my parents are hardcore drug addicts, but me myself, I've never used hard drugs in my entire life. I like to smoke pot, I ain't gonna lie. I like to drink every once in a while, but at the same time, I work a full-time job as an electrician, and I live in my van right here in Santa Cruz, California, and I still frequently get discriminated against the police, and I am frequently harassed and have no say in the matter.
Would you be interested in joining a van residence organization?
I would definitely. Most definitely. The only thing is, I do also have two canines, dogs that I live with that are.
Let me take this off tape here. Give me one.
There needs to be a place. There just needs to be a place. You know, any kind of place. Just something where people can go in and have some kind of shelter.
Are you outside?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Come Maybe in. Your pooch is.
That's Wendy.
And where did you and Wendy, if you wish to say, crash last night?
We're sleeping up towards Zimmerline, up in under a mezzanine.
Any hassles?
Yeah, please. There's some of the people that were across the street by the freeway that were staying up all night, got ran out, and they came directly over to where I was and brought the police over. The cops weren't saying anything about me being there, but when the crew came over.
Now, were you alone across the street there?
Yeah. Just
went. What did you do then?
We just got up and went down to the homeless shelter. I found somebody's wallet. So I took him back to. I remembered the guy from when I was over there one time, and I took him back his wallet and his ID and stuff. And I talked to Paul down there and got some money.
Left the money in the wallet.
Huh? There's no money in the wallet.
No money in the wallet.
He had all his credit cards.
But you didn't add any money to the wallet.
No. Oh, God. I didn't have any put to it. I had to walk down there. I didn't have bus money. So it was a trip.
Well, and we're talking with, if you want to say,
John Van Zandt.
Thanks, John and Wendy, I might add.
John and Wendy.
All right, well, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm a master mechanic, and I've owned restaurants, so I can do anything. If you need any help at all, because we're not doing anything during the day.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Nice to meet you. And we've been listening to the non-comment of Trixie Endeavors. Thank you. Hey, any reports from the street?
Not this week, no. Thank you.
Well, let's get busy here.
No kidding.
Everyone's getting bored out there.
I know. Yeah.
How can I make my living? Any street reports?
Cabin fever.
Indeed. Yeah. A dog. What do you got to say for yourself?
Okay. You know, I like to watch YouTube.
What have you found?
And there's a lot of people who comment on videos. They do commentaries on videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some videos lately I would love to do some commentary on, but I'm not going to.
I see.
Now, I'm just going to do internal dialogue with myself about what I've witnessed.
Now, you saw the video of Chief Mills talking with Alicia Cole, right?
You know, she did great.
I thought so, too.
And I love Veronica Crowe. What a gorgeous woman is that. Oh, my goodness. I love them. Those girls did fabulous. I'm so happy for them. I'm so happy that they did that.
What did you find out of that? Did you learn anything new, or is this sort of
I'm
old
I'm always head? Learning new. I'm learning new things every.
And again, if you want to see that video, simply go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media and look for search for my name, Robert Norris, is the top story, which gives you a link to the video of Alicia Cole versus Andy Mills at the police department. It's educational in that you get to see how the police department avoids questions, and if you've ever had confidence in the police department's willingness to actually respond to real concerns, it might make you think again about that on listening to Mills' response to these specific inquiries. I mean, isn't it that Andy doesn't put himself out there to at least chat with people? He certainly does that, far more so than any police chief I've ever known in Santa Cruz. But what does it mean if he's not willing to take action to alleviate the complaints and change the policies that are criminalizing people and driving them from place to place and making them feel like less than human beings and subjecting them to fines that are ultimately going to cause them to lose their vehicles?
Every day. I mean, apparently they were, I got to make a video about all the things that I think when I watch that whole thing blossom.
Good, I'm glad to see it. But what, any offhand impressions now that you remember?
Yeah, I think that everybody who has any kind of issues revolving or challenges involving vehicle dwelling need to get a hold of Tristia Bauman. That's T-B-A-U-M-A-N at nlchp.org. And document your experiences with Tristia. And, of course, there was a woman there with the Santa Cruz Tenants Association.
Cynthia Berger.
And what was her URL again?
You know, if you look up Santa Cruz Tenants Association, you'll get to it.
Or if you simply call 222-0379, you'll be able to leave a message with or speak to Cynthia directly. 222-0379. Double-checking. Sorry, 222-0359. I hope you got that last one. 222-0359 is actually her number. And she's, again, compiling a record of RV incidents that need correcting. Or, I mean, if you've got particularly good treatment from a police officer, well, let her know about that as well.
Okay, what was her name?
Cynthia Berger.
Okay, so get a hold of Cynthia Berger because Cynthia wants to keep record of any incidents. And I think it's really important.
222-0359, I believe, is her number.
Okay, verify that.
That's 222-0359.
Very important to document everything. That's what I say about it.
I didn't see you at the protest, lady.
I have responsibilities until 3 o'clock.
I'm sure you didn't tell me that. Yes,
I wish I could clone myself, but I'm sure that there are some people who would rather I not.
And there are those who would like to see more of you.
I don't know about that.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers. I shared your latest URL with your radio shows about the video that you talked about. And I shared that on Santa Cruz Full-Timers, RV parking rights, and Santa Cruz Safe Parking. If anybody wants to click on that link, they can watch the URL about Andy Mills, SCPD chief, with the vehicle dwellers. And if they want to leave comments or make their own video commentary, I would love to watch it.
And comment on it, perhaps.
Yeah.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
You're repeating yourself, Julie.
I know. We're gonna make sure everybody knows who we are and where we're at.
I did ask you twice. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Look inside your tiny mind, then look a bit harder, 'cause we're so uninspired, so sick and tired of all the hatred you harbor. So you say it's not okay to be gay. Well, I think you're just evil. You're just some racist who can't tie my laces. Your point of view is medieval.
Please.
And that was Fuck You by Lily Allen. And that's a song that's garnered 37,000 plus comments on YouTube. And it's, I guess you can read your way to heaven on this particular number. Many, many, many comments. But, well, you got to hear the song. And coming up, more interviews. Here's one from, kind of got this one on the fly, from an old Occupy Santa Cruz stalwart who's, well, he begins anonymously but ends up saying who he is.
Talking with an anonymous individual who may choose to name himself, there are three things you'd like to see the city council do. What are those three things?
Well,
one you say is to deal with overdevelopment downtown that brings huge buildings and pays wages to out-of-town workers, but creates simply an escalating cost of living here.
Choose Santa Cruz is the name of the program. It's to attract tech corporations here and their jobs, but typically they bring people from out of town and don't hire here. And so, you know,
you'd like to see the city council. What kind of legislation would you suggest?
Choose local instead of choose brand name corporation from out of town.
Now, earlier I also heard there was some concern, not from you necessarily, but the huge library boondoggle that's going to be going up as a 5-story building.
Well,
the parking garage, that is.
I think we need to think accessibility. Libraries are the old model of accessibility, and they need to be revamped. Things like makerspaces, hackerspaces, those are the new models of accessibility. Because why? Our governments have failed. You know, they're just staying with these old models that are not appropriate.
Do we need new places to park our cars?
Cars,
You're not a car kind of guy, it sounds like.
I ride my bike everywhere. This is a town that's much easier to get around on bikes, but, you know,
so. What do you do if it rains and you get wet?
I really don't have a specific opinion on cars, you know.
What about this library movement to the basement of a parking structure?
Well, as I say, I believe in community spaces that are accessible to all and empower individuals to start businesses locally. Not spending taxpayer money to bring out of town tech businesses here that typically bring their employees from out of town.
And then send their money out of town.
Yes. So let's empower individuals locally to start businesses and get together in community spaces.
Now, you mentioned three different proposals yet. Yeah, and recall the other two.
Can you remind me?
You only mentioned one of them, and that was, I think, one you just talked about now. How long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
Over 20 years.
And I know you were involved in the Occupy movement. Do you see any such movement as having a success, such as the Yellow Jackets or Yellow Vests movement, happening here?
You know, I don't like commenting on specific things. I like stick to the principles. Accessibility. How do you measure the success of your community? So use the measuring stick, accessibility. How does it apply? Who does it apply to? You know, what is the openness of community? When I go downtown, do I feel comfortable? Or do I feel like some people are excluded? Do I feel that some people are suffering? How do I feel when I walk to the downtown and I see some people that are sleeping with their face on the sidewalk? How does that make me feel? That makes me feel my community is degraded. You know, that makes me feel less good.
Degraded rather than...
My quality of life is degraded when I see people with their face on the sidewalk, because we could do a lot better in Santa Cruz, can't we?
But surely Chief Andy Mills has a whole new program that makes you feel so much better.
The people, I think, have to come together as a whole, and then we decide. We push the city and the police to... When the population of this town comes together and says, yes, we are going to deal with these issues as a whole, then the whole thing will be resolved. I do think there needs to be education, though. I don't think people understand the issues. There's a distortion in the public mind.
Our Santa Cruz uneducated? Is that what you're saying?
Well, opinions are abundant. But solutions, you know, that actually
more elusive, right?
Are a bit more elusive, yes.
You wish to identify who you are, shall you remain anomalous?
Chris Connor.
Thank you, Chris.
Nick Whitehead, or Nutcracker Nick, as you're going to hear me call him, is one of the co-founders of Conscience in Action, speaks regularly at the city council meeting, and is on the scene for various activist protests, including this most recent supporting of Alicia Cool in her attempt to get some answers out of Chief Andy Mills. Here he is, he being Nick Whitehead.
Okay, well, it is Thursday morning, about 10:10. I'm on the line with activist Nick Whitehead, whom I call Nutcracker Nick, because he cracks a lot of hard nuts and has in his time done a lot of community organizing. I, of course, met you, Nick, when we began SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, almost 30 years ago. Good morning.
Good morning, Robert. Are you there?
I am. I'm right here.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to sound off a bit about big development interests operating in our area. I live in Aptos Village area, sort of Trout Gulch Road area, and the local developer, Svensson, has built a rather large complex there of townhouses and condos. And these condos are said to be worth $1 million purchase. There's no garden around them. There's no real living space. It's just this building sitting on concrete, really, or asphalt. And a lot of people around here don't like this development. It includes some stores and a big attractive barn, a historic barn. That's a nice barn. But this thing was pushed onto the community in a very unfair manner. They, about 2 decades ago, they got permission. They got a waiver. They didn't have to get an environmental quality assessment, that the state mandated environmental quality on this particular development. And also, they used out-of-date traffic records. They used traffic records from 15 years ago to say that there won't be a real impact on the local populace. already feeling the impact. It's really dangerous. There's too much traffic already, and people haven't even moved into those houses. So that's the kind of thing that's happening. And just up the road, the Safeway, Rio Del Mar Shopping Center, that whole complex was taken over by a Southern California developer, and they got a lot of favors and waivers, as usual. And they just killed off the local coffee bar, which was incredibly popular, and gave it over to Pete's. Pete's, another big franchise. They closed the cinema. They closed the bookshop earlier. These are devastating impacts of these big development companies. Okay, I think I've said enough.
Never enough, Nick, but thank you for talking. And, yeah, I remember myself, the hamburger place that they had was superb. I loved it. It was right around the corner from the cinema. It's gone.
The Aptos Hamburger Company, I think it was called.
And there was actually some protest about that whole thing. I went there when people were...
Yeah, oh, good, good.
But it didn't...
Eric's Deli has reopened, so that's one good thing. I like Eric's Deli.
Is it? I mean, is it a state chain? What's the story with Eric's, do you know?
I don't think it's a state chain. It's a Southern California chain. I can't remember the name of it.
I gotcha.
But here's the thing. When they move in, they say stuff like, well, we're only going to change the facades of the buildings. That's what they tell the public. We're only going to change the appearance a little of the outward part of the building. And then, next thing you know, there's giant cranes and giant bulldozers moving everything around. And they're completely reshaping the whole place.
Sounds like what they're doing in Berkeley with People's Park.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I appreciate...
Our local protector is Becky Steinbrunner. Becky Steinbrunner is a real good activist in this particular area where I live. Mm-hmm. And she also shows up at Board of Supervisors meeting, and she'll tackle anything that's happening in anybody's neighborhood.
Now, does she have a website where people can get more information? Or?
I'll try and get that next time I see her. I don't have it.
All right, well, we'll be waiting for your next report, Nick.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everybody.
Hey, you too,
man. Back to Nick, signing off.
Bye-bye.
And speaking of People's Park, here's a story from the Berkeley Daily Planet by Thomas Lord. That's an online publication. It's also, I guess, got a hard copy, I'm told. I haven't seen it recently. Kind of like the Daily Cal in the old days, if you're an old Berkeley habitué. Here's the story from January 15th. More than 100 police officers, some from the UC Police, some from the California Highway Patrol, conducted an armed takeover of the eastern portion of People's Park early this morning, according to multiple witnesses. At least two adjacent streets were closed to vehicle and pedestrian traffic during the operation. At least three persons who were engaged in nonviolent protest were arrested for sleeping at a vigil they'd been keeping. The police, however, report a total of 6 arrests. Police escorted a contracted and likely non-union tree-cutting service into the park to kill and remove, quote, several large trees. Longtime friend of the park, former counterculture cartoonist and Berkeley resident Ace Backwards, reports being moved to tears upon arriving to see the damage done. The action comes on the heels of a prior early morning sneak attack that removed trees on January 2nd. That action involved far fewer police, but did help to grow the group of nonviolent protesters from a small handful to around 50 this morning. The university has asserted that the tree destruction is simply, quote, deferred maintenance. Park activists have pointed out that the university is destroying old, healthy, beautiful trees that pose no risk to public health and safety. Further, as reported in the Daily Planet, the university appears to be acting in violation of a memorandum of understanding established in 1979 governing the fate of trees in the park. And there's a story I'll be reading next called Trees Have Standing the Day a Tree Visited the Chancellor by Carol Denny. The action comes in the context of allegations that the university poorly maintained a eucalyptus tree outside the park. That tree fell north of the Greek Theater on the University of California Berkeley campus, killing Alexander Grant of Novato on January 7th. The university has come under scrutiny due to allegations the proximate cause of Eric's fall was the result of damage negligently caused by the university itself. On Berkeley Side, which is another news site, Dan Mogiloff, Office of Communication and Public Affairs at UC Berkeley, recently asserted that tree cutting in the park is unrelated to university plans to destroy the park and lease the park to a nonprofit developer. Defenders of the park widely believe otherwise, regarding the tree cutting as preparation for destroying the park and as a test of the size of the resistance that will defend the park. Ironically, the university's actions have helped to attract new defenders to the Save the Park movement. Ultimately, the university would like to lease the park to a third-party developer that specializes in operating for-profit dormitories. Construction was completed on a similar project recently, Blackwell Hall at 2401 Durant. The so-called public-private partnerships spare the administration of fully financing construction, but at the steep cost of charging dorm residents high rents forever to guarantee that a substantial profit can be made from student fees and financial aid. Students at Cal face rent gouging almost every which way they turn in Berkeley, and now the university is giving privately owned for-profit corporations a taste of that action, handing over public land to them in the process. This is some grade A prime bullshit, whether you are a student being ripped off or a California resident watching the public commons and open space be trashed on behalf of private gain. The university is steadfast, though, in its intention to destroy the park, a thorn in its side ever since Ronald Reagan unleashed a murderous police riot in Berkeley in a failed attempt to prevent the park from being created by the community in the first place back in 1969. The rioting police murdered James Rector with buckshot and blinded carpenter Alan Blanchard with birdshot. Verbal histories and contemporary on-air, on-the-scene reporting by KPFA report that numerous other people were also taken to the hospital after being shot by the police that day. The riot culminated in a declaration of martial law and an occupation of Berkeley by the National Guard, including mass casualty gassing of parts of the city from helicopter, persistent barricades and checkpoints, curfews, and the shock and awe menacing of the public with rifles and bayonets. The Guard made hundreds of arrests, and arrestees report being tortured by guards at the Santa Rita Jail. The people ultimately prevailed, and by 1972, the park was established. The people, though outgunned, literally many thousands of guns against zero guns, won by attrition, reacting to police riots with property damage, particularly police cars, tearing down fences and holding the moral high ground given them by Reagan's overreach. Today's organized resistance to Save the Park is so far small but growing. The activists are committed to nonviolence. Provocations like the tree cutting damage the park greatly, but they are also helping to attract new park defenders. The university's devious tactics, underhanded approach, and breaking long-standing agreements, and nakedly excessive shows of force are hard to understand unless perhaps the university hopes to invite renewed violence between the police and the people. The park is much loved by many potential defenders, not only for its beauty, utility, and history of hosting cultural events, but also because it has served for decades as a site of respite and social services for the poor. Since its founding, the park has served as a daytime people's community space, often serving homeless people and those struggling in various ways. The park is the site of a community-provided meals, peer counseling, or substance abuse issues, safety, and company. At one time, the park was host to a system of redistribution known as the free box, take what you need, leave what you don't, though the university succeeded in destroying that some years ago. At the time, a university spokesperson expressed that it was not the best way to get clothes to poor people, but offered no alternative. She was also scandalized by the thought that a poor person might sell something from the free box to a used clothing boutique and use the money for other things, perhaps even beer. The university has vaguely suggested it will remediate the loss of people-powered social services by providing conventional social services, but no such bureaucratic institution has ever managed to do with millions of dollars what is regularly accomplished more directly by the people. As of this writing, Mayor Jesse Arguin of Berkeley has released no statement about this latest provocation by the university. Activists expect that the mayor strongly favors the tree cutting and paramilitary intimidation tactics. Arguin is previously enthused over plans to raise the park, in spite of supporting the park while he was campaigning. He has additionally encouraged the university to enter into partnership with private developers to build for-profit high-rent dorms. He is known for delaying efforts to strengthen citizen oversight of the police and for supporting the participation of the police in the racist, militarized training and trade show known as Urban Shield. He has declared that anti-fascist protesters are, in effect, a criminal gang. He has led the city to spend millions on net reduction of available shelter beds. He has ushered in new harsh legislation to drive homeless people from the heart of the downtown by means of police action. And that's the story. UC Berkeley police raid People's Park before dawn, January 15th, by Thomas Lord in the Berkeley Daily Planet. And here's a story in that same Daily Planet by Carol Denny, who you probably heard singing on this station, as well as talking. I've got interviewed her a number of times on events up there. Trees have standing the day a tree visited the chancellor. The University of California just cut down around 40 trees in People's Park. This is a January 11th story, some days before the police moved in massive numbers, and I've seen the videos. There were dozens of police dealing with a handful of protesters. The University of California just cut down around 40 trees in People's Park in the middle of the night, arguing that they endangered public safety or at least blocked the light. But trees, especially the trees in People's Park, have standing. They are not only part of the park's landmark application, they are included in an earlier memorandum of agreement from 1979, which included university promises, among others, to give notice before any further university efforts to disturb the community park, People's Park, which was just 10 years old at the time. The university paved the West End without warning in 1979 in an attempt to turn it into the UC-only fee lot instead of the free community space it had been. The community occupied the West End, tore out the asphalt, and a very wise mayor, Gus Newport, avoided conflict by making sure that the police were restrained so that the community could reorganize the West End into the community garden it is today. A later mayor, Mayor Shirley Dean, used this same tactic after another university threat to the park, quietly commenting that she wasn't sure the park city would be able to provide the university with any mutual aid. The mutual agreement from 1979 was strong enough that when in the early 1980s a university work crew destroyed a couple of trees, David Axelrod grabbed one of the felled trees by the roots and dragged it all the way from the park to the campus. He dragged it straight to the chancellor's office. "You can't go in there," he was told, since the chancellor was having a meeting, but he went in anyway, dragging the tree behind him. He gave the group around the table, including Chancellor Chenoweth, a piece of his mind about the destruction. David was one of the park's gardeners, as well as a park attorney and a musician. He had spent many hours documenting each plant in the park as part of an inventory for the park's native plant project, which carefully mapped the plants and identified them by both their common and botanic names. Chenoweth apologized personally to David in front of a whole meeting. Chenoweth acknowledged that the university had violated their agreement with community, claiming that he had no idea what the maintenance crew was doing and reparations were made to the park. It is especially worth thinking about today when the current chancellor apparently has no idea of the existence of a memorandum which is still, according to David, legally binding. David Axelrod's compilation and inventory of the native plants indicates that the East End is divided into 19 separate native plant community groups. The Redwood Forest section, the Closed Cone Pine section, the Pygmy Forest subsection, the Palm Desert Oasis, the Douglas Fir section, the North Coast Scrub and Sea Bluff section, the Great Basin section, the Sierra Forest section, the Oak Woodland section, the Big Sur Bed subsection, Mixed Evergreen Forest section, the Monterey Bed section, the Oregon Bed subsection, the Streamside Riparian Woodland section, the Hardwood Forest section, the Island Scrub section, the Chaparral section, and the Berkeley Mills Bed section. Sounds like an obituary. This inventory, available in the landmark application itself, needs to be used to re-inventory the damage the university has done to the decades-old community native plant project so that we can begin to replant it and honor the work gone before. We owe a great debt of gratitude to those who worked to create this beautiful educational illustration of native plant communities and to document it so faithfully so that we have a clear path to restoration. You can see from Axelrod's map, which she includes in the story on the Daily Planet, the Berkeley Daily Planet can be found on its website under berkeleydailyplanet.com. The enormous amount of effort it took to accommodate different forest groups with different climate needs to such a small area in order to represent an entire state's native plant communities. Chancellor Chenoweth certainly saw that the university had violated a legal accord and that the Native Plant Project was a community effort worth respect. If you're inclined to support respectful treatment of the park and community that built it, it is clearly time. 40 trees later, to pick up the phone and discuss the matter with your mayor and council representative. Perhaps even if you're not in town, you might do that. Their numbers are clearly listed on the City of Berkeley's website and in the front of the phone book with other government numbers. They know what some of us think already about gratuitous destruction of natural and park landscapes, but they may not have heard from you. We need what we once had, a commission where park issues are addressed respectfully in daylight rather than in unilateral midnight stealth. The university can certainly point at the tree that recently fell across Galey Road, killing a motorist, and say that trees can fall down and be dangerous, even deadly. But it is cynical to suggest that that's all trees are. It's hard to believe that 40 trees in People's Park were in dire need of removal for the public safety all of a sudden, such that no community discussion or legally mandated notice was possible. It's possible, of course, but it would strike most people as a pretty cynical view of a tree. Trees are comfort, beauty, respite, joy. They celebrate each season. They suffer mistreatment, and they help us mark the longevity of some of what matters in life. A tree in the park seen by someone walking by might be just a beautiful tree, but the person who planted it sees the day it was planted. Here's the music that was playing. Remembers the people who helped. The person sees something quite different when suddenly it is 10 feet tall and feels something quite different when it is removed because, according to the university, it is blocking the light. Another word for that, after all, is providing shade. Our landmark People's Park is internationally renowned as one of the few monuments to the anti-war movement, a symbol of free speech, a living monument to user development, a widely used and beloved community resource, and a treasure. Make sure your city council representative and your commissioners, who might be new to their roles, hear you say so. And if any listeners would like to contact city council in Berkeley, not in Santa Cruz, they are at clerk@cityofberkeley.info, and the phone number is 510-981-6900, 510-981-6900. And we're going to end the broadcast here with an interview with Alicia Cool, who I got on the phone today, and you get to hear what we talked about. Hey, well, it's around 1 o'clock and on Thursday, and I'm on the line with Alicia Cool. Cool. That's how I pronounce your name, right, Alicia?
Yes, that's it.
And, Alicia, you're surrounded by thousands of children.
Oh, yeah.
In your RV. And you spent a week ago, just around this time, you were going to a press conference with Chief Andy Mills, but perhaps more important, with a bunch of other RV people. What happened there? How would you describe it if you were to talk about it?
Well, we got to ask him some questions. He kind of gave the responses I guess I expected from him. I was hoping that he would be a little more, willing to change some things and talk to his officers a little more about what we were requesting specifically.
What were you requesting? What were you requesting specifically?
Specifically for them to honor our right to park for 72 hours before bothering us. Like, for instance, like, don't harass us. Don't come up to us, ask us what we're doing, anything until we've violated some sort of law specifically. Or even to show, like, that we've been complained on. Like, he wasn't able to specifically prove that when they do show up that they're responding to a complaint, which I found concerning. Because I feel like they harass people here. They just harass the homeless in general. And that's part of it. And I wanted to call him on that and see if he would kind of lighten up on that. And he basically, I feel that he just kind of justified, made excuses, said that he was, you know, doing his job, and that if we don't like it, we can take our, you know, complaints elsewhere, basically.
Mm-hmm. Did you learn anything at the conference that you didn't know before, either from him or from others there?
Not really. I mean, I kind of knew a lot about what was going on already, and that, you know, there are other people dealing with it. I learned that I was pretty much right about the fact that it starts out with just a couple of tickets, or warnings, however you want to put it. It starts out with basically really light harassment, and then it ends up being like a full-on target towards your home and getting you out of here and out of town almost. Because, like I said, it starts out a couple tickets that you can't pay, and the next thing you know, like Veronica, like a couple of other those people, it's $1,000 of tickets. $1,800 worth of tickets. So I did find out that I was right about that they're targeting me, and I was, like, well on my way to becoming one of those people, I think, had I not spoken out.
Do you think that speaking out has changed your status? Because you've been now, it's a week later.
I haven't gotten any visits or green stickers or anything since I've kind of made a stink about it. So I don't know if that's true for everyone. I'm sure Joe Habe is still doing his job, you know, that he's so adamant about and takes so enthusiastically. So I'm sure he's out still doing his job.
Tell me, who is Joe Habe and what's been your experience with him?
Joe Habe is, I guess, the one guy who's the parking abatement officer here in town. And it's his job to make sure that vehicles are not on the street longer than 72 hours in any parking spot. And he's supposed to respond to complaints and deal with abatement issues that way. Like, you know, you have a car in your neighborhood that's been parked too long, somebody makes a phone call, he comes out and follows up on that. That's, I guess, what his main job is supposed to be. But he's kind of like a homeless hunter, you know, an RV targeter. If he sees that you look like you live in your van, you know, anything that resembles you could be a vehicle dweller, and he's there with his stack of green tickets. I shouldn't say that. I should say not tickets, but warning stickers, because there is a difference.
How many times have you been warned by him?
Let's see. Two or three. But I've witnessed him do it dozens of times to others, too.
Now, is this in the same spot or in different spots?
Different spots. One time he got us on fair, along with a whole row of people. That's how I say I know he's not responding to complaints. And I noticed that Chief Mills said that, too, in his interview, that sometimes they might be responding to one vehicle, or sometimes they might be responding to a whole row of vehicles. I thought that was kind of weird, though, because I don't see anybody calling and saying, you know, there's a whole row of vehicles that have been parked longer than 72 hours. That's kind of weird. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, in those occasions when you were ticketed in a row of vehicles by Habe or stickered for a warning, whichever it was, I assume it was the first, the stickering, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it your impression that those other vehicles had been there for a longer, were they there when you arrived and so forth?
No. It's my impression, and I witnessed every one of those vehicles was there under 72 hours.
And how many vehicles are we talking about?
In a row, probably about six, seven. Uh-huh. He ticketed at one time. I'm sorry. Warning stickered at one time.
I gotcha. What about your current location in the last week? Have you been at the same location? Have you been moving? What's your situation been?
Well, I move every day. I've been really busy lately, actually. So I've been driving the RV here and there to different events. But I've been parking in the same location at nighttime. illegal because I've moved during the day and I'm only parking there during those nighttime hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't stay there for 72 hours, but I am parking. So far, it's been a safe spot. Nobody's complained on us, so I just go there at nighttime.
This isn't a spot where you previously have received complaints.
It's in the same vicinity, but it is not the same location. It is like pretty far down the street from the location.
Uh-huh. No friendly neighbors have come up to you and advised you that there's no camping in the neighborhood and you better take your RV to Cincinnati or whatever?
Not yet.
I gotcha.
We are still on the west side.
And no children have run away in terror from your RV, anything of that sort?
No, nothing crazy.
That sounds good.
I forgot to mention one of the times before in the first interview that when I first got approached when we were parked over by Farrell's Donuts on Fair, that one of the times that we were approached by a police officer, he did say something like that. He mentioned that somebody called because there was a child in the front seat unattended, which I thought was interesting because we were in the RV the whole time. It's just that if you're looking through the window, you might not have seen me and the child at the same time through the window, but we're all in the vehicle at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a strange phone call.
Just trying to protect your children there, Alicia, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell, but I don't know. They didn't come up and knock on the window and say, are you okay, or anything like that.
Yeah, they did. They knocked on the window and said, we got a report that there was a child.
No, I mean the person filing the complaint did not come up.
Oh, no. The person that apparently called and had this concern didn't bother to come up and ask, no. Which I would think, if you really thought a child was unattended, that you would do that first. That's what I would do, but no, they did not.
Now, we earlier talked with Cynthia Berger, who you and she are going to this meeting of HUF, which I also go to, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I guess you have some plans to sort of look into other RVs and see how they're doing, see whether there's problems with other RVs. I mean, you heard some accounts, as did I, since I was at this Thursday press conference with Chief Mills, and more important, with all the other RV people who showed up, I guess three or four of them. What's your sense of, have you had any connection with those folks in the last week? And what's your general sense about that over the period of time you've been in Santa Cruz?
Well, I did talk to some people when we were walking around. I was trying to get some people to join me at that press conference. I did get a few people to join. I talked to more people than actually did show up. So I heard a lot of numerous stories that weren't even able to be shared there because the people didn't show up. But we're trying to put together kind of, because I wasn't able to get that directly as, like, contacts for people. But we're trying to put together more of, like, a network where we can just be more in contact with each other to share these stories and share information.
I believe Cynthia Berger had a number for people to call if they have any problems in their RVs or they have friends who have RVs. They want to be a friend of the RV movement for housing justice, since you are, you know, a form of housing. I think her number was, do you have her number? I'm looking for it now.
I don't have it on hand, and it was like
222-0359. I've just found it. Again, 222-0359 for people who are interested. And I guess you were present when we discussed the idea of some sort of also solidarity with people in the Ross camp out at the very bulging at the seams campground behind Ross, the Gateway Shopping Center. There's a Martin Luther King Day rally coming up, which Chief Mills will be heading, along with the local NAACP, both of whom I've been very critical of. What's your reaction to that? And I guess we've also talked about setting up some kind of informational tent or something at the end of that rally, So we can, I guess, one, get information about people who are experiencing the kind of RV problems that you and others have found. But also, there are concerns about health and safety out at the Ross Camp. You've been actually contributing to the Ross Camp, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, I have. I went on multiple Facebook groups, and I have a couple of people that I know out there. So I had a couple people tell me that they need blankets, tarps, warm clothes, that all there haven't been enough dry days, so basically all their things have gotten mildewy. So I did put together, I only got about 7 bags so far, but it was a good contribution, and I dropped them off. But there were a few people that were basically kind of, I don't want to say fighting because they weren't fist fighting or anything, but they were kind of trying to get the blanket. It seems like there's a greater need there than definitely than what's being filled, because the way I look at it is if there were enough blankets, you know, the person would have said, you know, I have enough blankets, you know, go see if XYZ needs blankets, but I'm fine. You know, there's clearly a need for more there.
Now, was this the first time you went down to give away sleeping bags and blankets there?
That's the first time I've been to this camp. I've helped people, like, steadily in this community. That's the first time I personally visited the Ross Camp.
Now, when I was last there, I walked through the camp fairly easily from the Ross parking lot, but I understand you had some difficulties.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I had just intended on pulling up in Ross parking lot, kind of walking over to the side right there and distributing them, but what happened is there's a fence right there, so I basically had to flag down a couple of people that were visually, obviously, from the camp and throw the bags over the fence to them.
And they then ran off and sold them on the black market?
Well, they ran out and distributed them however they did, which, you know, is great. I try not to worry about that because I know wherever they went, they were needed.
Well, I know that one of the things that we talked about at the Huff meeting was the concerns that one camp member, Greg, brought to the meeting, which has to do with potable water, washing water, more milch because the entire place is getting very muddy because of all the rain, and also, ways of making sure the water gets siphoned off into a sort of a saving the whole camp from flooding.
Right. They have some sort of a ditch system there that needs to be, like, worked out and, like, redone or something, because if they didn't make it themselves, I guess the whole camp would be flooded. So they've got some sort of water detour thing that they've done themselves, but it could be addressed by the city or, I don't know, somebody else to make it a lot better for them.
Now, you have contacts with people in the camp that you can reach by phone or email.
I don't, but I'm going to try to get better at that. I want to go there again and see. I know that you asked his name Greg to do that, but I was thinking I might do that myself and go down and try to get some contacts, some personal contacts, because I have a couple people, like I have a friend named Desiree. I'm pretty sure she lives there somewhere, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to go and try to find her. She would be somebody who would really be able to help me with what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Regarding Chief Mills and his Monday morning appointments, I think he said maybe between 9 and 10:30. I could have the time slightly wrong. People can make an appointment to come and chat with him. What would your advice be to RVers who want to appeal to his more sensitive nature?
Well, you know, it depends on what you feel like putting yourself through. I mean, you can go there and, like I said to him, in person, face to face. What good is it to go there and pour my heart out to you if you don't have a willingness to change anything? It's absolutely pointless, and it would just make yourself feel bad. So I don't know if there's any point in that at all.
There is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, and I guess there was some talk of confronting city council with essentially a demand that the Ross Camp folks be given some emergency help. You had some interest in that, I believe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They need some immediate help, and whatever I can do to assist them in getting that, I mean, it's terrible that you can't just ask, I mean, you can, but you're often not heard. But I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get some attention immediately over there, because they need immediate help. This weather is really bad.
And how is the weather a challenge for people in RVs at all, or is it?
It depends on how good your RV is. I thought that this RV was actually better than it is. I've got leaky windows. I'm having to wipe moisture off my windows. If I'm not careful, I have a mold issue, too, because I have to make sure that I constantly keep everything dry. I've had to do some extra caulking and sealing on the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy said that it was a sound RV that doesn't leak and everything else, and I spent over $10,000 on this RV, and he wasn't honest entirely, and so now I'm having to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. So... there's also, I guess, California has, I'm told, one of the highest gas costs, gas prices in the country. Have you found yourself having to spend a significant amount of money on gas for your RV? And how does that fit into your budget?
Well, that becomes actually really difficult. And the more that people harass you to move outside of that 72-hour mark, the more expensive that can get. So... gas is really expensive, and RVs are not gas efficient at all. I'm not exactly sure what this 1996, you know, Fleetwood Tioga gets, but I have to average, like I said, it depends on how much I drive it, but if I want to go from here to Seabright to do my $10 dump, it's like a $40 trip, because I have to put the gas and everything and then do the $10 dump, so it becomes a big thing. It's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as cheap and like the free ride everyone thinks it is. I know that.
Have you gotten a lot of criticism for living in an RV in Santa Cruz?
I have. I've gotten criticism. I've gotten a lot of comments, a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of, I guess, generalizations that go around too that I feel like a lot of people share that I hear commonly, like, yesterday, I heard, why don't you move to Modesto? Things like that. They're just not helpful and not, you know, a solution at all.
That was from one of our Huff members, I think.
It was. And it's an honest question, and, you know, if he wants to know the answer to that, I didn't mind answering it.
And what was your answer?
My answer was that there's several personal reasons why I don't move to Modesto, but I used a generalization that I like to tell everybody, is that this city has a lot of hospitality workers, and in general, a lot of workers that make under the $15 an hour mark. That includes your hotel maid service, your Taco Bell workers, you know, people that might massage your feet. I don't know, a lot of different type of workers that service you, your people that bag your groceries. If all of them left and moved to Modesto, what would this city look like? Who would be running this city? Who would be doing all those jobs?
Automation. Robots, of course.
Well, and to which the response was, people will commute. People will commute to these jobs from, like, Hollister, he quoted. And I kind of chuckled, because I don't think that's true, and I don't think that's feasible. That just puts the poor man even poorer, and I don't see that anybody's going to be commuting here for, you know, $11 an hour from Hollister. Who would do that? That doesn't make any sense. And they're already making a low wage. Why would you want them to have less of a paycheck to take home to their family because they have to commute to Santa Cruz for $12 an hour? It just makes the poor person poorer. It's not a solution towards, you know, solving this poverty crisis. You know, everybody who's poor just move further away. That is not going to work.
Yeah, but it gets them out of our hair here, Alicia.
Yeah, I get that that's what everybody wants, but it's not going to fix the problem. That ideology is making things worse. That's exactly the reason why nothing's changing.
Now, you've been to a couple of, for the first time, as I understand it, maybe I'm wrong about that, to governmental bodies. You went to the Parks and Rec Commission. That was at my instigation. Then you also went to City Council. I also prompted you or encouraged you to do that. What did you learn, if anything, from those two expeditions?
Just that there's a lot of politics involved in this kind of stuff, and a lot of different channels towards getting change. Like, you know, if you want this thing, you got to go to this person. If have a problem with that, this is the person you talk to. And then you have to persuade them to listen to you, you know, have a heart, understand what you're saying, and then you have to get them to do something about it. It takes a lot to get change. I'm noticing that.
Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity to add anything you want to this series of questions that I sort of have arrived out of myself here. Anything you want to add? Any thoughts you have?
No. Nothing, I guess, specifically. I mean, just that I did apply for the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. We both know that's, you know, a shot in the dark. But if they were to pick somebody like me, it would do them service because they need, like you said, they need more voices of the people. They need more straight community contact so that people who are actually living in these situations or difficult situations or even who have had experience can directly tell them what it's like because and what is needed service-wise and et cetera. Because having these people that have never experienced anything and who are part of the problem because they're spreading these myths and these untruths be the decision makers and the only voices that are heard, I think, is also part of the problem. Nothing is coming down and actually helping people because of a lot of different reasons. But if we could get a voice that it actually really knows what's going on to speak for things, I mean, I do think it would help.
You're here. Well, thanks, Alicia. I will leave it at that, and you'll be on the air at 6 o'clock tonight, I should say, on the stream. It'll be archived shortly thereafter under Lost Shows on the Huff website. I think you were able to find that last time.
Yes, I was.
Excellent. Well, now you can find it again. Thank you, babe.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye. And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream of Free Radio anyway, this Thursday, January 17, 2019, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. I'll be with you running through a bunch of interviews, mostly around the RV harassment situation or the need to essentially look at that whole situation more closely, establish a way of monitoring claims and concerns about harassment, and then acting on them in some meaningful way. Also up for discussion, the new fence around the Ross Camp, as we call it, and the upcoming city council meeting and the proposed step back from the rent control and just eviction protection under threat of referendum and recall. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking.
It's
why
been 50
sing
years
of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Warming Center program, Watsonville and Santa Cruz, not open tonight.
based on temperature forecast. So, if you need shelter, there are shelters every night in both Santa Cruz and Watsonville. In Watsonville, Salvation Army on Union Street, open every night, 7:30. Santa Cruz is the Salvation Army winter shelter. They have pre-registration. You have to email them first. Email address is wintershelter@gmail.com. Let them know your name, date of birth, gender, etc. If you need a blanket or warm clothing, leave a message here. Keep calling back. We'll try to get something to you. We hope you get on all the waiting lists at the Homeless Services Center.